Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, okay. Shall we get started?
Yeah.
Watch, you're going to die because this professionalism is going to kill you.
Okay, I'm ready.
Brothers, sisters, siblings, welcome to Penn Sunday School. I'm Matt Donnelly, and we are broadcasting from, well, all kinds of different places because it's a bank show. This week, Penn is going to be sitting down with the co-hosts of the Side Hustle podcast, Chelsea and Sarah. You may recognize Sarah's voice from our own theme song. She's one of the voices you're hearing right now. But here they are, preaching the love, Chelsea, Sarah, and Penn.
Get ready. Hold on to your butts.
You know, I'm gonna tell this story real quick.
I can't wait.
My great aunt Mary, who passed when she was 93, who was most
in a car
of the war, and
then
she's dead. Okay. She died. Yeah, at 90, not 93 miles an hour.
I thought she passed there at 93. Was. I was gonna go. She's driving fast.
She barely
probably shouldn't be in the HUV lane.
No,
with her BFFs, Thelma and Louise,
and she's small. She was short, so she probably couldn't see over the wheel. Oh. Is why she
blocks on the accelerator.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was a
killer Mary.
She killer
that's
Mary.
What they called her.
Yeah, well, she was in vaudeville.
What did she do in vaudeville? What was her gig?
Mary was part of her two other sisters, Agnes and Rose, were the Clark sisters. She played the fiddle. They were kind of like a singing trio, like the Andrews sisters, but they were the Clark.
And did they do a little bit of comedy in there? Must have a little bit.
They danced
very
and
hard
sang
to have
mostly,
a
but. I think there had to be. And she was tiny. So I think there was a lot more.
But many, many people were. People were smaller and lived near the water. You know, when they were in, when I was in high school, briefly, they took us, one of the trips we went to was the USS Constitution, which was a battleship docked in Boston. And I'm from Western Massachusetts, so a trip to Boston was a huge deal.
Yeah.
That was a two-hour bus ride for us. And I still remember—
Not if Mary was driving.
Right. Like maybe an hour 10.
Yeah, tops.
And I remember, I don't remember anything as a rule, but I remember from when I was a child, they took us to the USS Constitution. That was the big thing that the older children talked about. You went in sixth grade, and the older children said, oh, you're going to go to the USS Constitution. And I remember they took us to a joke shop, a magic shop. And I'd never seen a joke shop or a magic shop. But they had plastic vomit for a joke. You know, you throw it down and say, oh, someone was sick. And I remember that it made me so sick. Looking at the fact that they had plastic vomit.
Oh, yeah.
I've always not liked any sort. I'm not a scatological comedy guy. I know I made The Aristocrats, but I'm really always bothered by it. When it goes to vomit jokes or fart jokes or shit jokes, I always tense up. And I remember seeing the vomit in the kid and being excited about going to a joke shop.
Yeah.
And then seeing that the idea of a joke shop was plastic vomit.
It's fake vomit.
And I remember gagging.
Oh.
And thinking that I was going to vomit and how embarrassing and terrified that was. And then we had, it's all going to tie together. Then we had little powdered sugar donuts.
Oh.
And the donuts had some sort of industrial taste to them.
Yeah. Like a chemical,
like when you're going down on Little Debbie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That same taste.
Yeah.
Slightly metallic.
Yeah.
And somehow my brain attached those cheap sugary donuts to the plastic vomit. and I'm still uncomfortable with cheap sugary donuts. High quality sugary donuts, I'm fine with.
Yeah.
But little cheap ones.
Like Hostess that come in the white bag.
Hostess, I'm kind of okay, but there's a cheaper one that are
cheaper than
they're
Hostess.
Circular.
Yeah.
They're a sphere.
Yeah.
And they're only circular if this were a two-dimensional world. And we're not in that. They're spherical.
Yeah, they are.
And they're dipped in powdered sugar.
Yep.
And they have the taste of plastic vomit in a Boston Joke magic store. That was my first real association to magic. And that's where I grew to hate it. And then...
It's a perfect segue. You wrote your own segue scooter here.
Yeah.
No, but watch this.
Okay.
Watch how this all comes together.
I
will show you. We're talking about Aunt Mary, right?
Yeah.
And how diminutive she was.
Yeah.
We went to the USS Constitution, and I was a big old thing. Remember, I was taller than my second grade teacher.
Holy moly.
You know how much grade school teachers who get into this whole thing because of a power trip over little people, when there's a larger person than them in the class, the hatred they had is overwhelming.
Palpable.
So we got to the, I was fine with overwhelming. I didn't need palpable.
Oh, sorry.
Just so you know.
I'm showing off.
Palpable would have been fine.
You guys, you know, I as soon as Penn walked in the room, I was like, quick, Chels, think of lots of words. And I was like, I'm ready. Yeah.
The USS Constitution, they all told me, you know, this is from when people were smaller and lived near the water. Because going through the USS Constitution is one of the nightmares of my life, along with being on Geraldo Rivera's yacht. And I'll tell you,
because of the mustache,
they put me
terrified.
They put me in when he was going down on Aunt Mary.
Yes.
they're little Debbie, but I was just thinking about going down on Mary. So the doorways were 5'3" 5'4" and made of metal.
Yeah, they were like hobbit holes.
Made of metal. Horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible, horrible. And I remember being in that claustrophobic USS Constitution. And that trip to Boston is when I developed my hatred for magic and also decided I'd never be in the military. Because those little places. And there was a thing that my nephew did. He lived in a little house. A very little house.
Like a tiny home?
No, it was before tiny homes.
Oh, just a little house.
He just lived in a small house across the street from his mother. It was on a fairly big plot of land because it's, you know, it's the sticks. But it was a very, very small house that was built many years ago. And I went to visit him. This is recently. This is maybe 20 years ago. He does outdoor tree work. He goes up in a tree.
An arborist? I can't stop with the words.
Arborist?
I literally.
Yeah.
I'm like a steel trap.
She was reading the dictionary all morning
when I wasn't Googling you.
You're so happy because you only got to arborist.
That's true. Listen, A, you kind of just finished there.
You might be okay with groundskeeper.
Oh,
but that would have been five letters later.
Yeah, I didn't get that far.
No, there was a lot between arborist and groundskeeper.
He's there taking care of trees. Like, making sure.
Yeah, but he was also a groundskeeper at Deerfield Academy, which is all where the rich people send their children.
Oh.
Now, when I say nephew, he's an elderly man. He's only 7 years younger than me. So because my sister was 23 years older than me. But don't think it's some sort of Bobby Darin or Jack Nicholson story, because I don't think it is. You know that both Jack Nicholson and Bobby Darin, they're sisters with their mothers?
Yes, I did know that.
Not true for me, I don't think. There are pictures of my mother in the hospital.
Okay.
And both of them on their deathbeds did not
confess.
Did not bring it up. Do you know how Jack Nicholson found out that his sister was his mother?
No.
Oh,
did
man.
Did she tell him?
I'll get back to where I'm going.
I know you will.
She didn't tell him. No. He had done Chinatown. Now, remember the B story of Chinatown?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And he was doing interviews, I think, with Esquire magazine. And the interviewer said to him, "So how did you feel when you found out that the woman you thought was your sister was actually your mother?"
Oh, no.
And there was a long, long, long pause on the phone. And the interviewer said, "You didn't know." And Jack said, "No." And the interviewer said, "I guess the interview's over." And he said,
"Wow."
Yeah. The interviewer had gone through court records. just to get deep stories on Jack.
We did the same thing in preparation for this podcast.
You wanted to do a different, you said, you know, Penn's related to an arborist. Let's bring that up.
I have to be honest with you, though. I always have known you, or known about you, not known you personally, but like know who you are. But then I decided to do a creepy Google because like, why not? But now I know too much. Like, I know that your mom was born in 1909. And now I have to live with that knowledge, looking at your face, knowing too much about you.
She was wicked old when I was born.
Yeah.
So I went to see my nephew, Denny.
There he is.
And Denny, when I went to the house, because he works outdoors and has a lot of experience with this. By the way, Denny can work for 10 hours in like minus zero weather. And I say, aren't you freezing? And he goes, it's never the weather, it's always the clothes. Here's a man who knows how to dress for cold.
Yeah.
So I went to the ante room of his tiny, tiny house, a little like shed. And he said, put this on. And he gave me a hard hat. And he said, I can't count on you to remember how low the ceilings are, so you will bump your head. And everybody laughed. And then I went in and I was hitting that hard hat
like crazy
all the fucking time. So that was Denny.
Denny,
I love Denny very, very much. And Denny talks like I would if I hadn't left Greenfield. And there was one very embarrassing thing. Taylor was visiting, along with me, visiting my parents in Greenfield. Mm-hmm. And the phone rang and my mom and dad were in their chairs. So Teller said, I'll get it. And Teller answered the phone and said, hello. And a voice said, "I Teller, this is Denny. I was thinking that we're going to come over and maybe have supper a little later. And Teller says, listen, Penn, you cannot get on the phone and just sound stupid and think you sound like Denny. You don't sound like Denny just by talking stupid. And at that point, no. I walked into the kitchen and Teller went, Denny?
Oh, no.
Yeah. But Denny, if I put on my regular Greenfield accent and talk like I was brought up to talk, like Monday, I'd sound just like Denny. We sound identical. Denny tells this story that I think is, I just wish it were a Bob and Ray routine from the 50s. I was talking to Denny about tree work.
Yeah.
And Denny said that he would go up 40, 50 feet in a tree with a chainsaw, right?
Yeah.
And he said, well, it's dangerous enough, you know, be up that high, but also holding a chainsaw. If you fall, you can also fall on the chainsaw.
Oh, yeah.
So it's really dangerous. And I said, well, Denny, if you feel yourself falling, can't you just throw the chainsaw far away from you? And Denny went, yeah. You can do that, yeah. But it's tied to you, so it comes right back. Because if it's not tied to you, no one will work your ground crew. But I always think that the perfect New England humor is, you can do that. But then it's tied.
And that feels like a good old vaudeville bit, even.
Yeah, it does. It does. But it's tied to you. You know, my favorite New England joke from the Bert and I. You know Bert and I? You probably don't know Bert.
I don't know Bert.
Bert and I are always credited as being the traditional Yankee humor.
Okay.
Except they were from California, I think. And they went to Harvard talk. And when they're rich kids, really rich kids. They would go up to a farm in Maine. And they learned the accent, learned some of the jokes, and put out all these records. You know, back in the 70s, maybe even into the 80s, if you traveled somewhere in the gift shops that also have records of local humor, you know, like you go to Shreveport, Louisiana, and they'd have whatever his name was, Brother Dave something was popular down there. Mm-hmm. And you'd go to, you know, Florida and they'd have and up in Maine, they'd have Bert and I. That's Butt and I, right? Mm-hmm. And they ended up, these two rich kids, ended up making their living pretending to be Maine farmers, which everybody believed they were.
Appropriation.
Very much.
Maine farmers.
And there's a joke in there that just kills me for the New England timing of a joke. And it goes like this. My wife has been sick for 14 years. And I've had to wait on her hand and foot. I sure wish she'd get better. Or something.
Also, this voice has like essence of like Tom Hanks. Somehow, close your eyes and listen to him do it. It's like Tom Hanks is Bert and Ice.
Yeah, you could throw it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could throw it, but
yeah. Oh, it's
tied to you, so it comes right back.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
My favorite is you can't find anyone to work your ground crew.
Yeah. But when I think of going down in your Aunt Mary, when I think of that and how little she was, I think about how she would probably be able to scamper around the USS Constitution.
Oh, just sailor.
In and out. She could have been
around with a little packet of plastic vomit in one hand and some really cheap donuts in the other.
Yeah. Terrifying.
Just hiding plastic vomit and giving out sugary donuts.
And playing the fiddle.
Honestly, that was her act.
You know, you went to school in California.
I did. Yeah. You can tell.
And you had a whole showbiz family.
I had a whole showbiz family.
Yeah, I just don't understand that at all.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Where were you from?
Oh, I'm from Oak Ridge, Tennessee. My life is the opposite of Sarah's.
Now, when's the first person you met who were in there living in show business?
Who was the first person I met that was like making their living in show business?
Yeah.
Well, this is a great...
That's what I just said.
I know. I had to... Sorry. I was repeating the question to make sure I understood.
I don't mean an arborist.
It was like a very pageant girl thing. You repeat it and then you're like, excellent question. Thank you. Truthfully, Dolly Parton. So I was always like our hustler.
The first person you met was Dolly Parton.
That was making a living in show business. Yeah,
but you absolutely. Met personally.
Yes, because I was in her Dolly. Show when I was
Speaking
a kid.
Of short.
She's a tiny lady. We were like the same. So when I was 11, I was hired. She was doing a Christmas show at Dollywood, which was like an hour away from where I grew up. And so I was hired because I was like a creepy kid that loved to tap dance and sing. Nothing's changed. I'm just tall. So then I had auditioned and I got this job. And so I tell everyone, I'm like, this was my first experience working in professional entertainment. And Dolly Parton is the most wonderful, kind, lovely
and
human.
And you met her one-on-one.
Yes.
And you said to yourself, boy, am I flat-chested.
I was like, you just wait. Because I was like so underdeveloped. I mean, Sarah knows this. We've talked about this. Like, we both grew up dancing. I did not like hit puberty until like 15. So I was literally like, dear God, please let me wear a bra. Please let me get my period. And, like, I just could not wait.
Yeah.
So I was 11.
And God answered. This is the first example I've seen in my atheist life of a little glimmer of maybe
God.
Yeah,
there's hope. Look at these D's. Yeah. I mean, just boobs for days.
Yeah, you got the heavers.
Yeah, they're here.
Inspired by Dolly Parton.
I got two of them.
But if we're being honest, I've also prayed to God for boobs and I never got them. So
there's the
con. Our God works in mysterious ways.
And I prayed for boobs. many, many times. Often.
Yeah.
So not to have them, but to have them
around you.
Yeah.
Like amongst me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was my first experience. And she was the most wonderful and she was so kind. And I remember the first thing she said to me, because we were in rehearsal all day and we like rehearsed with the choreographer.
She said, boy, you need some tits.
No,
the first
she
thing
didn't,
she said,
Ben.
Okay, sorry.
She was so sweet to me. And so I remember like, they were like, okay, Dolly's coming this afternoon. And there's like five of us kids. And we were singing, I'll Be Home with Bells On. I still remember the choreography. And my mom was there, of course. And my mom was like, don't be weird. And I was like, I promise that. And so then she came in and she looks at me. She goes, oh, aren't you pretty? And I went, you are too. Because I was just like, she's beautiful. And she was so sweet and she knew all of our names and she talked to us. And I was like, wow, everyone that works in showbiz is so nice.
Yeah. Dolly Parton is an example of just the smartest, funniest, and kindest.
Yes.
And best bred.
Yeah.
Person you're ever going to meet, just incredibly polite. If I had to say you're going to meet one person in show business, mm-hmm. and that is going to be what you remember. I can't think of a better example than Dolly Parton.
I you peaked
can put,
too soon.
You can put Tom Hanks, Jay Leno, and B.B. King mm-hmm. on that list.
Oh,
but
really?
Jay Leno is so nice, it's creepy. Like it may be a mental illness.
Not
believe it. And Tom Hanks, it's his job.
Yeah.
But B.B. King, I would put up against Dolly Parton.
Yeah.
And I'm picturing that now, and it's a nice look. I think I downloaded that. But B.B. King is the level of nice that Dolly Parton is.
Yeah. And the things that she's done for East Tennessee, like, because this, you know, her own dad couldn't read. So she gives every kid born in Tennessee a book a month until
she
turned five.
A book a month?
A book a month. It's called Dolly's Imagination Library.
And she also, cured COVID.
Single-handedly.
Yeah.
She really did.
That was the thing. That's when I realized that our country was really on a downward slide.
Yeah.
When the anti-vaccination thing hit.
Yeah.
And I think I actually said, maybe to Matt, I said, you know, if somebody who was really popular in the red states mm-hmm. came out in favor of this, maybe we could turn people around.
Yeah.
And Dolly Parton did a pro-vaccine video.
Yeah.
And I went, well, that's it. This is solved. And it didn't change anything. And
went,
we're fucked.
Yeah.
We're fucked.
She also donated like $1.5 million. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
She also picked the right horse.
Yeah.
How'd she do that? There's a lot of people working on vaccines. She picked the ones that were going to do it.
Because Dolly can do no wrong.
Dolly can do no wrong.
Yeah.
I spent a New Year's Eve at, I think it was Geffen's house with Barbra Streisand, Dolly Parton, Dustin Hoffman. We were the entertainment. And I remember saying, Teller does this thing where he swallows 100 needles, 6 feet of thread, brings the needles up threaded, right? And we said, we were trying to decide, in the show, in the proper show all the time, we don't plan who we're going to pick. But in this crowd, we thought we should.
Mm-hmm.
So we were backstage talking to the host or the host's assistant and said, who should we pick for needles?
Yeah.
And Teller described the bit. And he said, I think go for Dustin Hoffman. And Teller went, I think we want like the least famous person we can get. And he said, that's what I was going for. That was the company.
That was the party.
And after New Year's hit, it ended up, Teller was of course talking to Barbra Streisand.
Of course.
And I was over talking to Dolly Parton. And talking to Dolly Parton for me was a little bit like a Jewish giant at home in Brooklyn, the Diana Arbus picture, because it just, you couldn't have me be more freakish than just contorting
so
my whole
tiny.
Body
and
to
her
talk
whole body
to Dolly.
Is like this.
Yeah.
And she's so beautiful.
Because how tall is she? She's 5'2", but then she wears giant heels.
I would say with the giant heels, maybe 5'2".
Oh, wow.
I would think, I mean, we're talking Paul Simon.
We were the same size when I was 11.
We're talking
Paul Simon.
Red Hot chili peppers. The Red Hot Chili Peppers are so little, they look like they're further away from you. and supposedly.
They keep getting closer, but they don't get any bigger.
I've supposedly AC/DC is smaller. Than the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
No.
But there's a picture of me backstage with Flea and Anthony, and I actually have my hands on my knees and I'm bent over because I'm deaf. So I want to be able to hear Anthony, who's speaking like a California
mayor of the Munchkin City.
He was like doing that.
No, he's speaking like this. Yeah, I really like this. I like the stuff you do.
Flea is named Flea because he's teeny tiny.
Yeah. So I'm leaning over like this, and it really looks like I've come to Munchkin Land.
I love that.
But I always have to say, although showbiz people, rock and roll people tend to be little, there are exceptions. Led Zeppelin is a tall band.
Oh, really?
The whole band is tall?
The whole band is tall. I mean, Jimmy Page is like 6'1".
I was going to say, too, for our listeners, I don't know how much I trust you in general. No, just kidding. But because you're 6'7". You are giant.
Right. So that's
so
why I'm
maybe
saying,
your opinion is that's skewed why. Of who's fault. Maybe they're average.
What's his name? My best friend's Joe Jackson.
Sure. Your best friend is Joe Jackson.
No. But Joe Jackson had a song, My Best Friend's Girl.
Yeah.
He was one of the one of the fake punk people in the early 80s.
Yeah.
He's 6'7".
Wow.
Who wouldn't expect it. Plays himself off as little, but he was tall. And of course, our Rick Ocasek.
And she used to be mine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the other tall band, surprisingly, the Grateful Dead.
Jerry Garcia.
Not particularly. He's the shortest one of them.
Yeah.
But Bob Weir is over 6 foot, and so is Phil Lesh. I don't want to pretend I'm a fan of the Grateful Dead because I don't judge my music entirely by height.
By height, and so
I do.
So we know that
I'm
we know that
only.
That the Red Hot Chili Peppers can go on the USS Constitution, but the Grateful Dead cannot.
Right,
we have solved the America's Navy problem if they had one.
You want to stay away. You want to try to keep the Grateful Dead off the USS Constitution.
It is true.
There'd be a lot of banging heads.
Yeah.
And heads in both sense.
We'd have. Yeah.
Oh.
In both senses.
Oh, man.
They don't need the hard hat.
Because I had, and this was a horrible experience for me. I went to a baseball game with Lorne Michaels and Paul Simon. Right?
How tall is Lorne Michaels? He seems short.
Well, that's where the story's going.
Sorry.
So
excited.
Lorne Michaels called me up and said, "You want to go to a baseball game?" And I said, "No." Yeah. And he said, "Well, Paul Simon and I are going to a baseball game. I'd like you to come along." I said, I don't want to go to a baseball game. I'm not a sports guy. He said, "You have to understand, Ben, this is business."
Oh.
I said, "Well, if it's business, let's meet in your office.
Yeah.
Why am I going to a baseball game?"
Yeah.
And he said, "You're coming to a baseball game with us." So I went to a baseball game with Paul Simon and Lorne Michaels. So we're sitting, and I get along very well with Paul Simon. I love Paul Simon, right? One of the people that's most important to our career. Paul Simon, Paul Newman. They both left their credit cards on file in our off-Broadway show and sent at least 10 people a week to our shows.
Amazing.
I didn't know that about Paul Simon. I knew that about Paul Newman.
Paul Newman.
And I love that story. I think it's such an important thing to have out there that they literally left their credit card at the box office and would send people and just say, tell them that you're my friend.
Their assistant would call up and say, Paul's got 5 guests coming today.
Yeah.
And they'd say, Newman or Simon?
That's what I was going to say. Only Paul's. But I didn't know Paul Simon did that.
Paul Newman really sent incredible. Everybody. And Paul Simon would also go to meetings and say, have you seen the Penn & Teller show? And if they said no, he'd say, listen, pretend you're in show business. Go see the Penn & Teller show. You should see it. So Paul saw our show in the first 3 weeks. He saw it like 3 times. And Paul Newman was there all the time. And Paul Newman, when we first opened on Broadway, brought 2 busloads of his racing crew to all see Penn & Teller.
That makes me so happy.
Paul Newman and Paul Simon were just fabulous. So I'm with Lorne Michaels. And I had a wonderful time with Paul Simon and Lorne Michaels, who is an odd fellow to say the least. Lorne Michaels said, "You know, it's really odd that you're funny and you do a good job because big people are not funny. All your geniuses of comedy. I mean, Charlie Chaplin is tiny. All the real people that are great in comedy are all short. And I don't know why that is, but you don't get tall people that are funny." And I said, and you yourself are short, aren't you, motherfucker? I said, and I didn't have the wherewithal to say, well, there's Bob Hope.
Right.
And there's Steve Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Martin, who's, I think, 6'1", 6'2". And not to mention Conan O'Brien.
Right. Oh, yeah, he's super
Howard
tall.
Stern.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Conan O'Brien and Howard Stern are both almost my size. I mean,
Conan
very, very
like
close.
Giant,
what's that?
I said Conan is big.
Conan's big, and Conan denies 2 things: how tall he is, and that he went to Harvard. When we wanted to do a trick with him that he would use a ring,
uh-huh.
we said, "You just wear your Harvard ring." So I don't like people knowing that. Yeah, and he also, if you used to notice watching his show, he wouldn't stand up completely when people came out because he didn't want to tower over people.
Yeah.
And when we did a show with Prince.
Oh.
I was talking, Prince, he'd have to go up on me. Very small person.
Yeah.
He's a tiny man.
Prince, we were talking and chatting and having a fine time. And then other people came in the room, and Prince said to me, I want you at least 20 yards away from me so there are no pictures of you standing next to me. Oh, I don't want any pictures.
You didn't want to be seen as so short.
And you remember David Cassidy?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I was doing a show here called Sin City Spectacular, and I was interviewing David Cassidy, and he walked out on stage, and I walked out and greeted him, and they stopped tape for no reason at all, and the manager came over and said, "You can't stand up when you meet him."
When you greet him.
And I said, "Well, I was raised to, isn't that polite?" And they said, "No, stay seated." And I've had actually several people say, "So I think Conan." Yeah. Does that kind of instinctively stand? Yeah. By the way, Letterman isn't short.
Letterman is also not
short. Fuck you, Lorne Michaels.
Yeah, fuck. I'm just kidding. I've been doing it wrong because I've been medium this whole time. I'm like a nice like medium lady with big old titties. Yeah. Oh, man.
But I think that he's kind of right. People in show business tend to be little. Oh. The example he used to lead with, of course, was your Aunt Mary.
Yeah, well, you
said
know.
Aunt Mary was Aunt Mary was a genius.
Yeah.
Well, Tom Cruise, yeah, Jesus Christ, he's a lollipop and a gigantic head.
Well, that is one thing I have going for me, America, hustlers. My head is unusually large, but that's why babies like me, because they can see me really well. Mm-hmm. And I'm like big features, so they're like, oh.
Well, the big tits don't hurt with babies either.
Yeah, you know, because of the milks.
But I would say all soap stars. <'cause of> the
It's true. I know I have what they like. But I feel like, not that I've met a ton of celebrities, but a lot of people I know that work in TV and film are tiny.
Yeah, well, and soap stars, particularly for me, anytime I've met a soap star, they are lollipops. Their bodies are so tiny, even the men, and their heads are ginormous.
Well, should we talk about Fisher Stevens?
I don't know who Fisher Stevens is.
Oh, he's on Succession.
Oh,
He's the one that has the head that sits on a pipe cleaner and is just gigantic.
Oh.
You'll notice. Did you watch Succession?
I have not.
Okay. Well, when the guy comes in, you go, Jesus Christ. You go,
that's Fisher Stevens. Fisher Stevens. I know all about him.
But when we did we were doing a movie with Arthur Penn, you know, the great director who did Bonnie and Clyde. And Arthur Penn is a little guy. And we were working on a scene. And Arthur Penn said, I know why they never cast tall people, and I will never work with a tall person again. Every reversal over-the-shoulder shot, we have to put the ceiling back in, and it looks terrible. And there's no good shot to get with you talking to somebody. He said, we just have to have you sitting down all the time. The first movie we did was called Invisible Thread that Bob Balaban directed, and there is a scene.
I like Bob Balaban.
Yeah, also little.
So tiny. He directed the first commercial I ever did here in Vegas randomly. I was a girl at a party. I don't want to brag.
Was it a Vegas commercial?
It was a Vegas commercial.
Yeah, we were in that commercial too.
Oh, yeah. Not at the same time. You were not my party.
No, but we were. I believe we're in the same commercial.
Yeah, I love that. That was how we first became friends.
Oh. And Bob Balaban, there's a lot of scenes in that where I'm talking to an eight-year-old boy.
Oh.
And Bob... and Bob Balaban was just going, we're seeing the lights and we gotta move all the lights that are on the child. We gotta move because we're shooting over the shoulder. We're shooting straight up into fucking space. we've got to cheat this, and then they would cheat it and say now. You can tell we're cheating it.
Yeah.
And when we're shooting Penn's point of view, it's just the kid is entirely framed by floor. We got to get something in there and we got to get the. This is just.
Why didn't they just have you take a knee?
I know. I should take a knee. And at that time, I was, you know, Black Lives Matter. I should have.
You should have just.
I should have been taking a knee anyway.
Yes.
All the time.
Thank you.
All the time. Yeah, so little people in show business like
Aunt
Mary.
I have two questions. One, Invisible Thread. Mm-hmm. Is that any? I don't think that's available anywhere, is it?
It's not. We own it.
Okay.
It actually came back to us, and it's not bad. And Bob Balaban directed it. We wrote it, and it is Andy Warhol's last appearance. Ooh. Andy Warhol is in it, and
what was his height?
Yeah, Andy Warhol was normal.
What were his kids
in that
like?
One way.
Yeah, that was the only way.
Yeah,
the only way.
Average height.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. Andy Warhol just said, "Well, I can't change my height, so let's change everything else." It was a very weird cast. We had G. Gordon Liddy, you know, the Watergate criminal who went to prison for the Watergate, and Bob Balaban said, "I want to cast G. Gordon Liddy in this," and I went, "He's a criminal."
Yeah,
and. And Bob said to me, and I still remember this, Bob said, if we had a guy from the inner city who did time for murder and then was getting out, and I said we wanted to cast him, he would say, oh, this is really good to help people rehabilitate. But the fact he was Watergate and the fact that we're liberal says that we're not going to hire him, I went, I guess we're working with G. Gordon Liddy.
Yeah.
And I remember...
I do hold a grudge.
Eddie Gorodetsky... Funniest man in the world. He writes everything you've ever seen on TV. All the stuff you see that's Chuck Lorre, that's all Eddie. He works with Chuck on everything. And you know that show Mom?
Yeah.
Eddie created that. And What's His Name Loves What's Her Name. He created that. And he writes Big Bang Theory.
Oh, yeah.
And he writes...
All the ones that make money that I don't watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he knows the formula.
He does.
Two and a Half Men, he writes that.
All that. Yeah. All those.
They all like successful sitcom of the last decade.
So yeah. I was sitting with G. Gordon Liddy, Andy Warhol, and we were sitting having lunch.
The names in this podcast alone.
It's so unbelievable. I always think he's joking, and then I'm like, no, he's being.
No, he's
G. Gordon Liddy, Andy Warhol, and Amazing Randy. You know, Amazing Randy, yes, the debunker. And Eddie walked up and say, I want to see the hate list for this team. And walked away. And I did the same joke again. We opened on Broadway.
Yeah.
We had Lawrence O'Donnell Jr., okay, from MSNBC.
Oh.
Greg Gutfeld from Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
And Glenn Beck were at our opening.
Wow.
And Gilbert Gottfried. And the four of them were standing together, and knowing that Eddie was really funny, I walked over and said, is there anyone in America that likes everyone in this group? I don't think there is.
No.
I think when you've got Glenn Beck, Greg Gutfeld, Lawrence O'Donnell, you've got almost everybody, then you throw in Gilbert Gottfried.
That's it. Except you. It might be you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we all know that ExpressVPN protects your privacy and security online, right? But there's something you might not know. You can also use ExpressVPN to unlock movies and shows that are only available in other countries. If you're like me and you've run out of stuff to watch on Netflix, this will change your world. I tell you, I'm using it right now. I'm over in London, and they don't let me watch my HBO Max, which I've paid for. They don't let me watch it over here. So I go to my VPN. I set it up so that it thinks I'm in New Jersey. Then I can watch my HBO Max. You can binge The Office on UK networks. See, it also works the other way. If you're in the US, tell me you're in the UK. You can really control where you want sites to think you're located. You can then choose from almost 100 different countries. So just imagine all the Netflix libraries you can go through. Love Korean dramas? Use ExpressVPN to Parasite off South Korean Netflix. It's really, really good. It's not just Netflix. ExpressVPN works, as I said, on Hulu, BBC Player, YouTube, you name it. There's hundreds of VPNs out there, but there's a reason I use ExpressVPN to watch these shows, because it's ridiculously fast. There's never any buffering or lag. You can stream in HD, no problem. I tell you, I'm using it all the time over here, and I use it also back at home. So if you want to get access to hundreds of new shows, go to expressvpn.com/pen right now. You can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. That's expressvpn.com/pen. expressvpn.com/pen. That's expressvpn.com/pen.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise. having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, here's my second question.
I can't wait.
Penn, as part of the side hustle,
right,
one of the things that we like to ask our guests is, being as successful as you are, somewhere along the way, was there a side hustle? Because it's weird for you, because sometimes side hustles are going on like The Apprentice. That can be a side hustle for you, since this is your main gig. But was there one in particular or something that stands out to you as a side hustle that just...
That you were like, what am I doing here? What went wrong? Well, was it the USS Constitution?
I've had real trouble with that. I tend to be... both Teller and I are incredibly pretentious. we really tend to be snobby and arty, and I tend to be that worst kind of snob that also elevates cheap art to a high level. So I'll be someone that'll be snobby about Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead and the Ramones and stuff like that. I'm snobby about that stuff. And I've always had this disdain for mainstream entertainment. When I was in high school, I wouldn't watch TV. I hated MASH and All in the Family, thought that those were grotesque and disgusting, everything I hated about America. And the bands I listened to were, 20th century classical and noise music. And, I was early fan of the Ramones when they played art museums, which is where they started. All the arty stuff, like the Residents out of San Francisco. I was working streets. I was a street juggler for a long time. And, homeless, essentially, living on the streets, juggling on the street. Teller and I did the Asparagus Valley Cultural Society, which was our first show with the third person, Weir Christmer. We had a huge amount of success, but we were playing like 965 shows. I remember that because the producers told me if we did 1,000, it would mean something.
Oh.
But we quit after 965 shows. 3 years.
So those 965 mean nothing.
So we were in San Francisco. I was... 25, 26. And I was doing 8 shows a week at a theater that was like 100 seats.
Mm-hmm. With the Asparagus Valley?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was doing a show that I'd written when I was 19 with them. And we had a huge amount of success. We were the longest running show at that time in San Francisco. We had gotten good reviews in the mainstream papers, but we were also considered, I would hang out with the Residents and the Dead Kennedys and all the
it's so cool.
All the hipsters of that time, and considered myself a hipster, and was set, Devo and Subgenius and all those people were the kind of people that I considered to be, or I hoped to be, my peers, and I'm also old enough that the idea of selling out still means something. That's gone to anybody under 40, I think. They just think, well, any money you can make in show business, make it. But I still had this idea that you didn't do commercials, you didn't do this and that. Teller and I, by the way, were set to do our whole life like that. We thought we'd never play a theater over 150 seats.
Yeah.
And we were happy with that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
yeah.
the part of the story that is so hard to get across. We didn't want to be on Broadway.
Yeah.
We did not want to be in Las Vegas. We wanted to be playing our little artsy show
right.
at little artsy theaters for the rest of our life and then supplement that income working cruise ships and doing magic gigs, you yeah. know, Renaissance festivals. We never intended to do anything mainstream. So we got off Broadway.
Yeah.
And then there were articles in Rolling Stone and People magazine, stuff like that. And that was okay.
And you felt okay with that?
I felt okay with that, okay. kind of, but a little bit creepy. And then it was Saturday Night Live, which was a show I always hated because it was so unhip. And you know, I saw, I just thought there
Not
were a bunch
mention
of-
Tiny Lorne.
Yeah. A bunch of stoners making stupid jokes. You know, I really didn't like it at all. And as
how would you know though? Because you didn't watch TV.
I watched the first show.
Okay.
Oh.
And Teller used to do this great description of every Saturday Night Live bit, which I think is the greatest description of a Saturday Night Live bit. State the premise. Restate the premise. Another character comes in, states the premise again. State the premise again. Third character comes in, states the premise as though it were a surprise. Pull back. Cue laughter late. Pretty good formula.
Pretty good. I feel like now I can really write a sketch.
I honestly, I'm like, we're booked. We got this.
Yeah.
Big thank you to our sponsor, NBC and Sunday. So
I had made a promise to myself that I wouldn't do television until I turned 30 because I thought people who did television before they were 30 went crazy. You know,
I mean, you're not wrong.
I knew Robin. I knew Robin Williams in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I watched a lot of people, you know, go crazy doing television before they were 30, Belushi. And I said, well, you know, I have kind of an obsessive personality. Mm-hmm. And so they offered me things when I was like 26, 27 to do situation comedies. And I said, no. Mm-hmm. And then the week of my 30th birthday, I did Saturday Night Live and David Letterman.
Oh.
And David Letterman was, in my mind, very, very hip. And I was also Saturday Night Live was okay.
You'd gotten okay with it at that point.
I'd gotten okay with it.
Were living in New York at this time.
Yeah. And also, everybody was blowing us. You know, like all the hip magazines were saying, these guys are hip.
Yeah.
So it was kind of okay.
Yeah.
Because we weren't like... they're doing a cheesy show.
Yeah.
It was kind of our show.
Cool.
And then I was going on Stern, and Stern was certainly edgy. I was going like 3 days a week. And I was on with Gilbert Gottfried.
Mm.
Can't go wrong with that. And Kennison, who I never really got along with, but was certainly a little bit out.
Yeah.
You know, and Judy Tenuta, who was out. And Emo
fringe,
Phillips, who were out. These were all people in the 80s, you know. And
I mean, no, I don't know them. I don't remember them.
But you heard those names.
No, I did. Yes, I'm aware.
And then all of a sudden,
I know all of them.
We went to Broadway.
Yeah.
And it was kind of okay because I was at the time going out with Debbie Harry and hanging out with Lou Reed, and that kind of balanced it because I'd see, you know, you'd go to the theater with Lou and you kind of go, this is okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then things just started slipping, and we were asked in the 90s, I guess, maybe later, to do the Hollywood Squares.
Oh, that's...
And when we were asked to do the Hollywood Squares, I just said, no, we can't do the Hollywood Squares. And they said Martin Mull was on it. Mm-hmm. Now, Martin Mull was, to me, still the epitome of intelligent art. I mean, Martin Mull did Fernwood Tonight, which if you've never seen it...
I love Fernwood Tonight.
I've never watched it.
Fernwood Tonight invented all comedy in the 80s and 90s. Everything Letterman did was taken from Fernwood Tonight.
Yeah.
Everything SCTV did, taken from Fernwood Tonight. Mm. Everything Saturday Night Live did, taken from Fernwood Tonight.
This is the problem. In the 80s, I only had PBS. We were poor. I missed it all.
The real...
or hip, as Penn would call it.
The idea of irony as a mainstream entertainment was Fernwood Tonight.
Okay.
And it was, Martin Mull was incredible. I mean, first place Tom Waits appeared.
Oh.
Tom Waits was one of the comedy people on there.
Wow.
And Tom Waits would come on and Martin Mull played this incredibly with Fred Willard.
Yes.
Fred Willard and Martin Mull hosting a show out of Fernwood that was a talk show. And, you know, these are two guys who, when they do improvisation, as Martin Mull said, doing improv with Fred Willard is like following a person in your car who doesn't use directional signals. He said, you can look in his eyes and you can't get a hint of where he's going or what he's doing. He's absolutely in the moment. And he said, there is no sense that he knows anything is funny. He said, never mind not giving a wink. He said, you can put him on sodium pent under a lie detector, and there is no hint that there's something behind that character. He just goes. So there was Martin Mull was on Hollywood Squares, and Gilbert Gottfried, who I consider to be the funniest person in my lifetime, and a very, very good friend, one of my closest friends. Gilbert had been on. Mm-hmm. But Gilbert was such a fucking genius that context did not matter at all. Mm-hmm. You put him on anything. You know, you put him on a talk show with Hitler, and Gilbert would come through stronger than, oh, I'm watching a talk show with Hitler. Well, he was always bigger than whoever he was on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you could put him on Love Boat, and Gilbert Gottfried would be brilliant.
Yeah.
And people would watch it.
Yeah. And he's also in incredibly shitty movies. And you go, I don't care. It's Gilbert.
Gottfried.
And I'm not mad. So, Hollywood Squares, you know. So Teller and I went on the Hollywood Squares. And, you know, it's
in the same square.
Henry Winkler.
Oh,
And we're on with like Batman and Robin from the 60s. I think we were on with great teams.
Uh-huh. You
know?
Oh, okay.
So it was the guys from, you know, I don't even know, some African-American situation comedy with that's very, very famous those two were there, Jamal and something. And I think it was Martin Mull and Fred Willard and the whole thing. And I went in, and I did this a lot in the early TV, and you can see it, and it's embarrassing. I was really did not want to be there. Mm. So when you go on the Hollywood Squares, I hate to deflate you here, but they give you the jokes you can do. They write all the jokes for you.
I am deflated.
No one's No one was improvising.
Oh.
And Gilbert would read the joke they gave him.
Yeah.
Really?
Which is the amazing thing about Gilbert. All the times you've seen him be brilliant and thought he was ad-libbing, a lot of times he was doing written material.
Wow.
But it's like Groucho Marx. Yeah. Groucho Marx, you can't see anything for him written. Everything was written, you know, and he could deliver it that way. And I would, because they don't tell you, you got to do these.
Yeah.
They say, here's the right answer.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Here's a couple of wrong answers you can bluff.
Yeah.
Here's four jokes for everything. And you got that all in front of you. I just wouldn't do any of those jokes. So I'm out there.
You go rogue.
Going rogue, doing actually my own stuff to try to be above the show.
Yeah.
And we're terrible. We're just terrible. Terrible. We did it again and we're terrible. And then Glenn Ali, who's me, he runs everything. He's my manager and agent and more than that, a friend. He said, just do the jokes.
Yeah.
Just do the jokes.
How about you just do the jokes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I went out, and it was kind of a heavy moment for me. I went out and just did the jokes, and they got laughs, and they felt like me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People thought I made them up because these people are really good writers for the Hollywood Squares.
Yeah.
And everybody knows everything. Everybody knows it's the Hollywood Squares. I was trying to pretend that, you know, I'm doing the Hollywood Squares, but it's being done by Steppenwolf, you know. So I don't know what was going on
right,
in my mind.
Yeah.
But I still was clutching at that thing.
Yeah. You know? Well, you had an idea from like your youth that you're holding on to.
That I wanted to be.
You wanted to believe in.
Which, of course, it never crossed my mind that Bob Dylan had a top 10 single, you know? Oh. And on top of that, Bob Dylan was on Dharma and Greg. He did a situation comedy.
I didn't know that.
And Bob Dylan did a lingerie ad for Victoria's Secret. We know why he did that.
That you would have done that.
In a second. So I just started realizing, and Billy West, who is one of the best voice guys in the world, he's one of the M&Ms.
And
He's every sort of voice you hear, any sort of cartoon.
Yeah.
He's the voice.
I'm trying to think of one in particular, but he's done.
He was on Ren and Stimpy and way back. And he's on SpongeBob. And he said to me once that there's one show business. And that one sentence, there is one show business, was so, so profound for me. He said, the guy working as a Santa at the mall, and Picasso, and Stravinsky, and porn stars, they all have the same job. There's nothing besides, it's the same job. Howie Mandel, Picasso, same job.
Yeah.
It's what we do after the chores are done. Anyway, we're going to talk more on the next show, but for right now, that was Penn Sunday School. Cha cha cha. You become naked. You know, we love you. Hey, Matt Donald, you have anybody to thank?
I do. I want to thank the people who support us over at patreon.com/pen. These people support us at a higher level. Thank you. Jamie Swan, Will Jason, David, I want to finger your coont, Brenner, Tristan Connett, Omar Rivera, Mason Gooch, Sagebrush, Matthew Mishu, Luke Mellon, Eileen Hunter, Jason Andrew Davidson, Peter B. Clark, Matt Williams, Tom Boner Office McQueen, Soapy Fresh, Dan Griffith, Brad Sherlag, Mike Cavanaugh, Rafiki, Steve Feldman, Jonathan P., NewRuleFX.com, Eric M. Ryan, Chris Tehachapi, Luke McKinney, David, insert meta joke here, Ruse, Matthew O. Sullivan, Betsy Batter, Little Mandar, Axe Weird as Shit but is enjoyed by Joe Bethar Bowers, Adam Stickney, Sax Guy Jimmy D., Nathan Julian, Christopher Harris, and Petty Officer Scoop. Thank you so much.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.